Real Life, the program that talks about the life of real estate in the Hamptons and the North Fork. The people, the places, and the things that are the pulse and heartbeat of life on the East End. And now, Associate Broker of Sotheby's International Realty, your host, John Christopher.
Hi, this is John Christopher for Real Life, and today I have as my guest, which I'm very happy to say, is the National Hockey League Hall of Famer, Rod Gilbert. Hi, Rod, how are you?
John, it's a pleasure being here with you, especially in this neck of the wood where I've made my summer residence here for many, many years out east, and I'd be happy to share a few moments with you.
Great. You know, let's start off with, I'm sure you read Malcolm Gladwell's book, Blink, where they did a survey in Canada, and they found that the date you were born going into first grade determined whether you'd be a great hockey player or a so-so one. So what month were you born?
I was born on July 1st, which did not affect any of my hockey situation versus playing with smaller kids. But it is a fact that the majority of the professional players have been born in the early months of maybe January, February, because there was a cutoff.
Right, there's a cutoff at school.
Whether
right.
It's like August 31st or something, so these kids had like 7-8 months advantage on the
right.
other kids, and they probably progress a little faster, develop a little easier, like keeping a kid back in school.
Right,
you
right.
know, if he certain months, it applied in hockey as well.
But not in but in your case, it was just that
it didn't apply to me. I don't know what happened.
You don't know.
I was an exception.
Well, that's right. Well, you are an exception. I mean, that's what it was. So you were born near Montreal, and how did you find the adjustment coming to New York as a 19-year-old?
Well, it all started when I was 16, John. I went. The New York Rangers had one scout, believe it or not, in the province of Quebec. And I was discovered there at the age of 14 by him, and he was a coach for an industrial league club. And then I was offered a chance to develop with the Montreal Canadiens, like their farm team, which was a junior team in Ottawa at the time. And my older brother, John, advised me that it would be preferable to follow the Rangers' path because I'd have better chance, less kids.
You mean less competition?
A lot less applicants, you know, like, mm-hmm. And there were only seven of us from Montreal that left for outside of Ontario.
When you say seven, are you talking about in your family?
What I'm saying about opportunities is like, let's say you have a junior team and you have 40 kids that are going to apply for that one or two position. But in this case, the club Guelph, Ontario, which was a farm team, a direct farm team of the New York Rangers, actually had lost 11 players of that junior team. Because
what
once
happened?
You get 20, you play junior from the 16. If you're good at 16, you play until you're 20, and then you turn pro.
I see.
So on that particular year, the Rangers farm team was really, really good, and they had lost 11 of their players
because they had matriculated
through age.
Right.
And so it gave me an opportunity to play there. And on the other hand, the Montreal Canadiens junior team only had lost one. So I was much better off. But it was difficult because they changed the language on me, John.
You were speaking French at the time?
All the time. I never learned English in Montreal. Like, I mean, I came from a community that out east of Montreal, like, there was no English spoken. We didn't take English in school. And it was difficult to ask a girl if you... They put me back in school, in high school, like my last year of high school, and I could not ask the girl if I could carry her books home.
Right.
So how are you going to get kissed that way? You know, so, but it was an experience that I cherish today because it gave me an opportunity to learn another language. And I played there for 4 years in Guelph, Ontario. And then at the age of 19, I had actually, it was the age of 18. They had it at Madison Square Garden, like the last game. They showed me in a trivia showing Chubby Checker, Let's Do the Twist. And the same year as I came to New York for my first game, it was 1960. And I didn't remember it. But I remember my first game vividly because the lights of New York when they came in, you know, from Kennedy Airport, and then do the Long Island Expressway. I mean, and then you see the vision of right at 34th Street, like with the Empire State Building and the skyline of New York. And then my experience was like, I was standing at the, not for the national anthem, in Madison Square Garden, next to my two heroes. Because these two heroes of mine had played where I was playing in Guelph, and Andy Bathgate and Harry Howells. As a matter of fact, their numbers are retired at Madison Square Garden as well.
Well, besides yours, right.
And I recall, like, immediately after the national anthem, there was one big harasser of Harry Howell in particular, which was a big guy, and he was supposed to be rougher and be a revelation for the New York Rangers, be the tough guy. And he was a finesse player. And this particular fan didn't like it, so he immediately, when it was silent, he could hear his voice from the balcony above. Harry, hit him with your pocketbook. And I couldn't believe that guy said that. I said, well, these are our own fans, you know.
And they're saying,
I better work hard here if I don't want them to yell names at me. So that's how I started in the Rangers. And then they sent me back to the juniors. And then I had an unfortunate moment where I had a fractured back. And they had sent me all the way to the Mayo Clinics in Minnesota and to do a spinal fusion. And then I missed an entire year. And then I played a few games in the professional minor league and 20 games. And then I came back in the playoffs against the Maple Leafs. And I was a sensation at that time because I scored 2 goals in the first period. And the people are really happy with me.
I bet. So, but that must have been a difficult time when with the problems with your back. Was there something that kept you going that said, okay, I'm going to overcome this?
Well, at that stage, I just had been nominated the number one player in Canada. And that's all.
So you're at the peak.
I was at the peak of the top prospect. Let's say there would be like 100,000 kids, you know, vying for a position. I would be the first pick. And then now I'm a no pick. I was like, right. And I said to the doctor, what happened is like when I got to the Mayo Clinic, the doctor looked at my x-rays and he said, wow, we need to perform a spinal fusion on you. And I says, well, go ahead. I mean, I want to play hockey. Well, he says, I can't promise you that, but you can own a hospital. Because he had knowledge of when I did break my back in Guelph, they sent me to the hospital, and I was paralyzed. And then they put me in traction, and then they give me a chiropractor, and then they put me back on the ice with a fractured. He says, you know, we're going to try our best, but
there's no guarantee.
There's no guarantee you're going to play hockey, but we're just going to try to make you walk, okay? But I said, I don't want to own a hospital. I'm not a doctor. I just want to play hockey. He said, well, let's see. We'll see to that.
Right. We have to take a short break here, Rod. This is John Christopher for Real Life, and we'll be right back with Rod Gerber, Hall of Famer, and it's our delight. Thank you. Welcome back to Real Life. This is John Christopher, and we have Rod Gerber, who is a National Hockey League Hall of Famer. We were in conversation there, Rod, about what had happened with you when you were playing hockey and some of your teammates. One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, was Did anybody become a mentor along the way or that you still remember?
Yes, of course. My mentor is my bigger brother, which was 6 years difference than me. As you know, hockey is a difficult game, and it's like an intimidating game. And when you're excelling in hockey as a youngster, you have to play, in order to develop, you have to play against bigger kids and more like older kids. And the problem was that they tried to intimidate you. And so when I was 12 years old, I used to play against a 16 years old, and they used to beat me up. And I had an older brother that was a hockey player. He never made it to any big situation league, but he, every time like some kid on the block tried to intimidate me and try to injure me, he would wait for them after the game by the bus stop and beat the dickens out of them. He just beat them up. I'd say, like, let my kid play. Let my younger brother play. Like, you can't be spearing him. You can't be cross-checking him in the head. And so I got to play against the bigger kids. And he's also responsible for choosing my decision to go to Guelph instead of, like, the Canadians.
Wow.
Which the path was a lot easier for me.
Is he still around, your brother?
Yes. He's 83 years old, and I talk to him almost...
every day?
Every day.
Can we get a shout out to him? What's his name?
Jean-Marie.
Hey, Jean-Marie, wherever you are, shout yeah, him out
talk,
to you.
You know, I talked to him now. He's 83, and he's doing well. And
God bless.
I says, where were you? He says, I went out for breakfast with my friends. You know, they have a bunch of friends. I said, we belong to a club. I said, what kind of club? What's the name of your club? Oh, he says, where are we hurting today? Tamalou in French, you know.
Right, right.
Tamalou, like where they talk about the knee, like every day is a different place, right? The shoulder, my neck is killing me. So it's called the Malou Club. And I laughed.
That is funny. Now, you're still the highest scorer for the New York Rangers. It's a title that hasn't been broken, and it must have been exciting getting there. Obviously, you're a goal-oriented guy, no pun intended on that. But when did you realize that you had a shot at that title that's been unbroken?
You know, you never do. I don't, you know, like when you progress, you find success as you go along a different level. You know, if I was a peewee at 12 years old, I play against the 12 years old. The score is 9-1. I have 8 goals. So you're confident. And then when you're 14, you're playing with men. And then you see like you're just as good as them. And these people have been developing all their lives. I mean,
right.
I was playing in a garage league, you know, with a grown-up man that worked. But they had been pros, like, but not in the NHL. But, you know, so I was holding my own against them at 14. So by 16, now we're developing professionally by 16 years old. So from 16 to 20, you play almost at the level of the NHL because all the kids are really, really good in these higher junior A league. It's just a step below the NHL. And so I was the best player there, like won the scoring title, the most valuable, so on. And then you come to the Rangers and everything has to fall in place. You know, you have to have the right teammates. And we did not have a really good team, like a complete teams with the Rangers, comparatively to other teams. And there were only 6 teams, John.
At the time.
And so the Chicago Blackhawks, the Montreal Canadiens, Toronto Maple Leafs, and Detroit, they had Gordie Howe, and the Canadiens, forget, you know, they had won 25 Stanley Cups. They won every year. And Toronto was like the same. They had all the recruitment of all the kids from Canada, from the province of Ontario. So they had a huge advantage on the other 4 teams, and that's what happened. And I sort of year by year, I saw the development of the Rangers, bringing new kids. They brought Brad Park. Then they traded for a kid in the minor league for seven of the younger players. They got Eddie Jockeman, a Hall of Fame goalie.
Right.
So Rattel had played with me since I was 10 years old, and we did play in Guelph together. And then we chose this left wing big outfield and became the gag line. And that line was the best line in the NHL at the time.
Yeah, it's legendary.
The gag line. As a matter of fact, Vic Hadfield's, Jean Rattel's number 19 was retired at the rafter, put his name, his number up there last year, and Vic Hadfield will be this year. So the three of us are going to be up in the rafters.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And it's kind of exciting, you know, to have the three of us there.
Oh, awesome. That is awesome.
Tough to score a goal from there, though. But we scored enough.
But yeah, I'm sure. So getting back to what you were saying with the goals, I mean, there must have been a point. Was it just because you were always making goals that you didn't even think about that you were going to be the high scorer? And just that was your motivation, let me get a goal. Let me get a goal.
Well, it depends with how you associate the game, you know, like how you visualize the game and you find that what your strength is. You know, it's like the most important thing in hockey is probably the goaltending, like if you're a goaltender. But there's only two of those.
Right.
So then I didn't like to be a goalie because the goalies didn't wear any masks.
Right, that's another thing I wanted to get to.
And then, yeah. And plus, like in the winter, we used to play outside, and if you stayed still, you froze. You froze to death. And then furthermore, like we used to have everything for a puck. We used to use a tennis ball. We used to mastic tapes, and we'd lose our pucks in the snowbanks. And then my dad was a blacksmith, so there was like some horse manure, you know, like it's called road apples. And that used to freeze in the winter. And we used to use those for a puck. That was okay, but that springtime is not good.
Not
for,
good.
If you're especially a goalie.
Especially if you get hit by it.
So you're not good for a goalie. So I didn't want to be a goalie. I wanted to be the shooter.
Right.
And I developed that shot because of Andy Bathgate. Because I played with him for 3 years when I did my ascension to the Rangers.
Right.
He was my mentor. And he was one of the top player in the NHL, won the scoring title. And I emulated him like so much. And he had all kinds of secrets where he curved the blade of his stick a little bit. And he was the first one to do it. And he was a true artist, I mean, and an innovator of the game. And I watched him all the time. You know, like.
I want to come back and we'll have you come back on again in just a moment. We're going to have a short break. This is John Christopher for Real Life. And we'll be right back with our wonderful guest, Raj Joubert, National Hockey League Hall of Famer. Hi, this is John Christopher, and I'm back with my wonderful guest, Raj Joubert. Hi, Rod. I'm glad you're back here again.
We're good. I mean, we're talking about interesting stuff that were very valuable.
Yeah.
Coming to New York, living in Long Island.
Right.
And that's what Long Beach.
Long Beach. Why
because
were you guys
all
living?
Because the players that were actually playing for the New York Rangers discovered that a lot of people from Long Beach, which is a beach community, left in the wintertime to go to Florida, and they rented their home for $100 a month or $200 a month. And we were the least paid of all the sports. And so my first year, for instance, was making $7,000 my first year.
Amazing.
And we could not afford, you know, like a big housing situation, and we all
So would you room with other guys, with some of the other players in a house?
No, they most of the guys had their family, but I had a roommate. Yeah,
right.
We shared a place, and it was like the community of Long Beach accepted the Rangers, and then as it turned out, in the middle of my career, we started practicing there, and they built an arena right there in Long Beach, and the community was welcoming. The players were well known, and they were all Ranger fans. And what happened is, like, the players were always together. The families were together. The kids went to schools together, and it made for unity, you know, and tremendous team spirit. And that's how we developed the game. You know,
right?
We had a great coach and general manager. His name was Emil Francis, and he was the architect of all that. Us living in that area in Long Island, in Long Beach.
Did the water bring you to out here in the Hamptons? I mean, having been at Long Beach, you obviously like water, and you're on the water now, so there must be some correlation.
Of course, you know, there's no place like, you know, the Hamptons, and I've been a resident. My wife had the vision to build a house in Sag Harbor. And we were there for the last 10 years. And now maybe you'd be happy to know that we had a contact that his name was John Christopher that found us a beautiful home that we purchased a couple of months ago to replace the old one. So thank you, John.
No, well, thank you. That's very kind of you, Ron. I love you guys. Anyway, speaking of, we were talking before about, you had mentioned that you guys didn't wear helmets or face masks. The goalies didn't have that. What was that like? I mean, that must have been...
It was stupid. What do you mean, what was it like? It was like you don't know any better. You know, like, if you wore a helmet in those years, it was like writing on your forehead, "I'm chicken." And so you'd get hit a lot more.
Right. They aim for you.
Nobody wore a helmet. And how can you wear a helmet when the goalies don't wear masks? And they get hit in the face, like, all the time.
Right.
So I've had my share of concussions. Like, I counted about 5 throughout my career.
But is that not from the puck, but from other players?
From falling down, hitting my head on the ice and getting whacked by the bigger players, you know, like elbow in the head or diving into the boards head first without stopping with my hands.
Right.
And
it's kind of hard a little bit, isn't it? I mean, on the ice.
I mean, the boards, they didn't move too far.
They move now?
And the ice is very difficult. The ice is very hard.
It's called hard ice.
So
right?
Frozen. But the reason you know that you have a concussion, first of all, you pass out. And just before you pass out, you have this electric shock that goes from the top of, right below your neck, the top of your spine, all the way to your coccyx. And it goes, bang, you pass out.
And that's it.
So you felt that shock. And then you wait for the ammonia to come to kick in. Because they wake you up and it says, okay, let's go. The game's going on here.
Come on.
And so they drag you to the bench and you take... There's no protocol then.
What?
No, we didn't go to the hospitals. It was just keep playing. But now it's much different. You know, if somebody has had his bell rung, you know, they take him in the back and his doctors and they give him a test and they don't let them back on the ice like they did us.
Right.
If we were like injured or seriously cut or something, they just stitch you right there. No anesthesia. They just stitch you and you put you back on the ice because it was such a privilege to play at that level.
You did it.
That you, if you didn't, you get replaced.
Right.
Because the coach and they say, well, he's scared a little bit. I asked one guy one time, he put me back on the ice after a severe concussion. Why he did that? Why he allowed me to? Well, he says, my mom was at the game for the first time, and in New York it happened, and I dove into the board head first, and she saw me unconscious, and so the coach come in, he said, your mom is really worried about you. How do you feel? What should I tell her? I says, well, tell her I'm fine. Well, he said, then lace him up. So he sent me back out there. And so later on in life, you know, like maybe 10 years ago, like he was like 85 years old, and we honored him as a former coach and general manager of the Rangers. And I asked him why he did that. He says, well, it's like falling off the bicycle. You had to get back on. I said, I'll tell you what, why don't I knock you on your butt right now? And then if you don't get back up, you're going to be afraid of walking, right? He didn't like that.
Of course.
He disrespect. I said, why did you disrespect me that much?
Right.
He says, well.
It was the thing.
That's the way it was.
It was. Exactly.
If I did that, then you did it.
Now, you're involved with a couple charities, right?
Many charities.
Can you
many,
tell us?
Many, many
charities. We have got a couple minutes, so tell us, because I know you're very big.
Well,
into
I'm
that.
Still employed by Madison Square Garden, you know, to do their community relations. And then I'm play the role of an ambassador, and I do their marketing. I'm the president of the Alumni Association. You know, some of the players fell on hard times after they terminated their career and their children. So we do have an alumni foundation, that which I head up. And then at Madison Square Garden, we have a wonderful, wonderful charity called Garden of Dreams. And we raise close to $10 million the Knicks, with the Rangers, with Liberty. Every employee's like chip in. And we have one major, major charity that we all sponsor. And also we have the Ronald McDonald House, which we have a Skate with the Great. Every year we skate at Rockefeller Center.
And does Ronald, does he skate also?
The kids come, I mean.
The character for McDonald's, you know.
Ronald McDonald guy, the clown?
He,
yeah,
the
he's,
he,
we
does
put
he
him
skate?
On the ice. his feet are too big. He can't put skates on. But we do have, you know, ALS. We sponsor ALS. We have many, many charities.
That's wonderful.
And I have my golf tournament. Somebody asked me to honor them with being the honorary chairman one year for a golf tournament at Pine Hollow in Buttontown, the two golf courses, for one year. Guess what? We celebrated our 25th last year.
Wonderful. That is
it's cool. Diabetes. It's called American Diabetes Institute.
How can? Is there any way that people can donate to some of these charities? Is there like a website or something that they can go to, or?
Well, I would suggest they go to the Garden of Dreams, because I'm in...
The Garden of Dreams.
Yeah, Garden of Dream Foundation. And then we have so many events.
That's wonderful.
And we have 20 partners.
I wish we had more time here, Rod, but yeah. We got to wrap this up. It's been a delight having you on the program. This is your host, John Christopher for Real Life. Thank you so much, Rod Gilbert, NHL Hall of Famer, for sharing your thoughts tonight. I also want to thank Sotheby's International Realty and the crew and the staff of WPVP. But more importantly, I really want to thank you, my listening audience, each and every one of you, for your continued support and enthusiasm that has made this 8th year of Real Life such a blast. I wish all of you and your family the best of this Thanksgiving, the upcoming holidays, and the new year. I look forward to seeing you next season, and have an awesome journey.
You've been listening to Real Life, the program that talks to the people about the places and things that are the pulse and heartbeat of real estate on the East End. Your host has been John Christopher, associate broker with Sotheby's International Realty. Your producer and engineer is Kyle Lynch. Theme music by John Christopher. Questions and comments can be emailed to john.christopher@sotheby'shomes.com.